Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April the 1st. Spring election day in Wisconsin. No fooling. Polls are open until 8 tonight, and you can catch the results and analysis of the state Supreme Court race tonight during an election night special starting at 9 o'clock. This hour, is our government obsessed with secrecy? Is secrecy good or bad for us, for our safety, for our national security, for our democracy? Those questions are explored in the new documentary, Secrecy, which is coming to the Wisconsin Film Festival this weekend. And we will explore those questions with the documentary makers this hour. And we will welcome your questions and views for them at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We are very happy to have with us Peter Gallison, who is a professor of history of science and physics at Harvard University and is the co-director and producer of the film Secrecy. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also joining us is Rob Moss, who is a filmmaker and director of undergraduate studies for the Department of Visual and Environmental Studies at Harvard University. He is the co-director and producer of many films, including Secrecy. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So first, maybe Peter, why did you take on this project?
Well, I've been working for a long time on the history of modern physics, and modern physics is, that is to say, physics since the beginning of World War II, is very tied up with secrecy because the development of nuclear weapons and radar in the war created a new kind and level of secrecy that had never been seen before. And since that time, all throughout the Cold War, the history of physics and national security issues have been intertwined very closely. It was out of those concerns that I became interested in how the secrecy system functioned, how it worked, who was involved, what the consequences of it were, not only for science, but also for a broader society.
Mm-hmm. And I would think, Rob, that doing a project like this, it would be hard to get people to talk to you about secrecy.
You would think so. But like all secrets, people have an urge to tell. This isn't to say that people were interested in telling us the secrets that they're guarding, people inside the system from the Central Intelligence Agency or the National Security Agency. But there was a kind of impulse to want to talk about the system because secrecy is such a powerful and imperative piece of our national security and our democracy, both. They both underpin both activities that are so central to our survival and to our flourishing as a country. So I think there were people wished to sort of go on the record to talk about why this was important, why we needed or why we didn't need secrecy.
Yeah, you talk with people from different perspectives on this, so you're hearing more than one point of view. Is your conclusion, does it fall on one side of the question or the other as to whether secrecy is good or bad for us?
It's interesting. You know, when we started out with the film, we thought we'd really hear people who wanted to have more secrecy or less secrecy, and there was that. And the film opens with some pretty harsh clashes between those two point of views. But what's interesting is that as the film developed and as we worked on the project, we came to see that many people, even inside the national security establishment, are concerned that there's been so much secrecy, so much overclassification, that it leads both to a disrespect for the true secrets, the things that really need protection, and also created obstacles between the different branches of government, the kind of things that the 9/11 reported on so vividly in the difficulties of communication between the CIA and the FBI, for example. And then so what we found was that in the end, what actually the critics and the advocates of secrecy were all very concerned with was how to handle a world of internet-based and distributed information rather than the tightly controlled, compartmented secrets of the Cold War, and that there was a deep interest in how oversight was going to work. That is to say, how we could guarantee or make the best shot possible at making sure that the things that were classified were properly classified.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Moss?
I think secrecy, it's probably worth noting that while we started probably by thinking there was too much secrecy, and maybe by the end we also think that there's too much secrecy, we didn't start with a foregone conclusion and then work backwards to support our conclusion. We moved forward through the material as we found it. And what we found was a world that was incredibly complex and sort of torturously circuitous. Everything had tremendous amount at stake, that the state of our democracy on the one hand and our national security on the other, and how we land on these issues kind of bounces back and forth between these two big, important poles. It's a complex story, and we hope the film reflects that.
We are talking with Rob Moss, who is co-director, producer of the new documentary, Secrecy, along with Peter Gallison, both from Harvard University. The documentary Secrecy is coming up at the Wisconsin Film Festival. It will be shown on Sunday, April the 6th at 4 p.m. at the Chazen Museum of Art on the UW-Madison campus. For more information and more information on the Film Fest itself and other offerings and such, go to the website WIFilmFest, all one word, WIFilmFest.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The 911 Commission findings said U.S. intelligence community failed to connect the dots. And a key point that the 911 Commission failed to grasp was that there were too few good dots. Intelligence collection capabilities require secret mechanisms that we know, if exposed, will be less effective, and in some cases, if exposed, will perish completely. We lost one very valuable and potentially lucrative source of intelligence on what turned out to be the most horrific attack on the United States in history. What a shame it is that we did not have this capability. The only reason we did not have this capability was because of a pointless and needless press disclosure. And the question for the American citizen is, was that in my interest? Was that in my interest as a citizen to have the press expose these capabilities?
And we will wonder this hour if that is in your interest, to have the press disclose the secret operations of the U.S. government when it does from time to time, or whether this does much more harm than good. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, who are the makers of a new documentary on government secrecy called Secrecy. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Peter Gallison, who is co-director-producer of Secrecy, and Rob Moss, co-director and producer of Secrecy, which will be an offering at the upcoming Wisconsin Film Festival. So what we heard there, I believe, is James Bruce from the Central Intelligence Agency talking about how The 9/11 attacks, happened in part because the press disclosed secrets.
Yeah, well, James Bruce believes very strongly that the press has severely damaged the ability of the intelligence agencies to maintain their sources and methods, and that in particular, in that sequence that you heard there, he's claiming that the monitoring of Osama bin Laden's cell phone was compromised by press disclosures, and that this led to the loss of a crucial piece of information, which is one of several things that he thought could have possibly led to avoiding 9/11. So he is very strongly against press disclosures. The film also goes on to interview, for example, Barton Gellman from the Washington Post, who argues very directly in opposition to that, that without press disclosures, we wouldn't know all sorts of things that we have to know about the world around us. We wouldn't know about Abu Ghraib, and we wouldn't know that the search for weapons of mass destruction was going nowhere when the government was still saying that they were, it was still an open question whether Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and many other things. So it's a very hard-argued case, and every point is disputed by the other. And it's that's part of the way we get into the film, is to try to make those issues front and central.
Yeah, and I here we have Tom Blanton, the director of the National Security Archives.
And if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, there's only one moment where they say the 9/11 attacks could have been prevented. And it's not from a CIA penetration of the cell, and it's not from extra signals intelligence intercepts on cell phones or satellite phones. It's not even from sending the FBI agents out to find those guys in San Diego living under their own names. They say in the 9/11 report, based on interrogations of Ramzi bin al-Sheikh, the paymaster, if the organizers, bin Laden, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, had known that their Minnesota flyboy, Musawi, if they'd known he'd been arrested, they would have called off the 9/11 attacks. The phrase that's used in the 9/11 report is publicity about Musawi's arrest would have caused them to postpone the attacks. Well, isn't that fascinating?
Isn't that fascinating, Rob Moss?
It is fascinating. Tom himself believes very strongly that distributed information actually protects us, that secrets keep us in danger and openness protects us. He goes on to describe how the federal government and local authorities looked for Ted Kaczynski for a dozen years, and it wasn't until they published the screeds that they were getting and keeping secret, it wasn't until they published those that, you know, his brother looked at that and said, that looks like my crazy brother. You know, maybe we should take a look at this. And they found the guy. He wants to make the case that it's openness that keeps us safe. Not only openness protects our democracy, but it's actually that openness keeps us safe.
Yeah. There are, though, secrets that should be secrets, even to people like Tom Blanton, right?
I think that that's true, although it would take some prodding to get him to admit that. Towards the end of the film, he says, you know, all you have to do is think about how to make a binary chemical weapon. I mean, we don't want that public. We don't want people to know that. He just wants to make the case that those secrets are clearly should be secrets, and that almost everything else should be open.
Yeah, we know it when we see it, Peter.
He wants to say that.
Yeah. And of course, the intelligence officials dispute that. They say that you don't know it when you see it, and that there are many things which don't look like secrets on the face of it. I mean, there's an example that some of the people at the CIA told us about where there was a congressional disclosure of a picture of a Russian bomber, and the bomber wasn't classified. Everybody knew about this bomber. But it turns out that the angle that the bomber was taken at revealed that a satellite could photograph things that had not been disclosed. So sometimes you can't, say the intelligence people, you can't tell. And that really goes to the heart of the issue, because if the press and the courts and the Congress and the people more generally didn't know any of the things that were at any time classified, it would be very hard to make the kinds of democratic decisions that we need to make to decide who to vote for example, what policies to follow, whether to go to war. At the same time, that it's true that there are disclosures that have caused serious harm. So we want the film to do is to precipitate a really deep going discussion about how to handle these issues. And in the end, one of the things that we do believe strongly is that it's possible and necessary to have oversight. Sometimes that oversight itself has to be secret, but at least people have to go somewhere and say, this is why I want to do this action, even though it's secret, and hear the reasons and lay it out and argue it out.
Yeah. Julie in Manitowoc joins us first. Hi, Julie. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wondered what you would think about some of the historical perspective of secrecy, especially the whole thing about just general thought and the possessiveness of thought that has come about, that we want our people to be thinking about certain things and we don't want the other guys to know what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the show, you talked about this, some of the origins around World War II. And growing up, one of my experiences around this was involved my mom, who was a librarian at Alice Chalmers who put together a display involving just general open references of physics, and this was reacted to very strongly, that this would, you know, somehow sort of expose secrets, if you will, mm-hmm. Around ideas of this. And then the other piece was, at the time my father was in university, and you know, he commented that people in the areas of physics and biochemistry would just sort of disappear. And that sort of, you know, collecting in thinkers to be thinking about what we're interested in and not let the other people have access to it, whoever the other people might be.
That sounded ominous, Julie. They would disappear?
Yeah, he said they would just disappear.
Well, does that make you nervous, Peter Galison?
Well, I think what Julie, the caller, is pointing to is not that they were killed, but that they went off into secret projects and that they, you know, that they simply vanished from the halls of academia. And that's true. You know, when you had the beginning of World War II, these projects, these war projects, involved gigantic sums of money and numbers of people. The atomic bomb project went from zero to larger than the Detroit car industry in 3 years. So these were, and we now have between 2 and 3 million people working in situations of secrecy in the United States alone. So these are immense structures, and understanding them is part of understanding who we've become.
Yeah, and you do delve into some of these historical cases, including the Robinson case. I that's something I learned from the documentary, that sort of the basis for a lot of our secrets today.
This is, I think, the Reynolds decision.
Oh, sorry,
this was a Supreme Court case from 1953 that deals with an airplane crash from 1948. A B-52 went down in Waycross, Georgia, and the widows of the civilians who died on the plane, who were testing secret electronic equipment, wanted to get access to the accident report, and the government did not want to give up the accident report. And by the end, argued that they couldn't give up the accident report because state secrets were involved in this plane crash, and if we went to court, then this information would be divulged and national security would be compromised. This was in 1953. This became the foundation for contemporary national security law. It's often cited by the government when it does not want to be sued and doesn't want information revealed. And every time they invoke the Reynolds decision, courts agree and say that's okay. As it happened in the year 2000, one of the children of the dead electronics engineers was noodling around the internet and came across a website, as it happens, called about that deals with accident mm-hmm. reports from government airplane crashes, as the internet does everything, and found the actual report and read it. And what happens in this report and what it discusses is kind of astonishing. That. And I don't want to give it away too much.
Yeah, don't, because we only have 30 seconds before news break anyway.
People should go see the movie, but mm-hmm. it does suggest that maybe the foundation for our national security law was built on a fraud.
Yeah. We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will welcome more calls for our two guests, the makers of the documentary Secrecy. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890.
When laid bare, their argument is there is no limit on presidential power. The president ultimately decides his power and no one else. If Congress passes a law and he doesn't like it, he doesn't have to follow it. If the Supreme Court passes a rule saying the Constitution is in a particular way, he doesn't have to follow it. He alone determines his power. The brilliance of the Constitution is set up in this idea that no particular branch gets all the power. Yet fundamentally, that was what they had claimed for the commissions. Fundamentally, that was what they had claimed for interrogations, for wiretapping, all of these things, and done it in secrecy.
That's from the documentary Secrecy, which will be shown this weekend during the Wisconsin Film Festival. Secrecy will be shown on Sunday, April the 6th at 4:15 in the afternoon at the Chazen Museum of Art on the UW-Madison campus. Lots of films being shown this weekend, over the next several days during the Wisconsin Film Festival. For more information, you can go to the website WIFilmFest, all one word, WIFilmFest.org. A toll-free number for more information, 877-963-3456. We are talking this hour with the co-director producers of Secrecy about the issues covered in this documentary about whether secrecy keeps us safe, government secrecy keeps us safe, or whether it does more harm than good. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, if you would like to join in. Our guests are Peter Gallison, who is a professor of the history of science and physics at Harvard University, and Rob Moss, who is director of undergraduate studies for the Department of Visual and Environmental Studies. Again, both the co-director producers of Secrecy. And our next caller is Milton in West Allis. Hi, Milton. You're on the air.
I'm far more concerned about the secrecy that has become entrenched in every other area of government. For example, secrecy in our sector of financial regulation has significantly contributed to our current economic crisis. We're no longer allowed to know the M3 number, how many dollars are in circulation, or the details of securities repurchase agreements, which could end up selling our national assets to other countries or international megabanks.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Milton, that our guests can address that, but maybe they can, either of you, about secrecy and other aspects of government.
Well, one thing that I could say about this is that what has happened over the last years is a huge extension of the domain of national security secrecy. Now, there are other kinds of secrecy that have nothing to do with national security, including secrecy within the private sector, intellectual property secrecy, and so on. But in national security, we are now classifying things about infrastructure that were never classified before. And so, for instance, first responders are often not allowed to know what the floodplain would be below a dam were the dam to fail, because it's thought that this could be of use to people with very bad intentions. But this means that in areas like first responders and police and ambulances and hospitals and everything else that needs to be planned for emergencies, we don't know things that were there. They're actually classified now. And so Homeland Security has extended the reach of secrecy vastly beyond where it was before.
Yeah. I think that the caller, is suggesting something that's accurate, which is, you know, one of the things the film wants to talk about is the way in which our climate of fear from the early 50s following the development of the atomic bomb in World War II, the fear of the Soviet Union, created a kind of apparatus of secrecy that took place around the Cold War is being replicated now in the aftermath of 9/11, and that many things are now going down the drain of secrecy. And Tom Blanton would probably agree with the caller. He's tried for years and years and years, as has Steve Aftergood from the Federation of American Scientists, to find out what the budgets are of that deal with secrecy, thinking that's an important metric about how big the system is and where our dollars are going and where the federal government is placing its, what it's actually interested in, what it's willing to pay for, and have never been able to get those budgets. It's completely a secret. And I think that the caller is right. It's one area among many areas in which secrecy is making it difficult for us to function as a democracy.
Yeah. You know, I meant to ask you, I played a clip just before we started this segment. That was Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, who is, tell us who he is and why he is upset with presidential power.
Well, there's a guy named Hamdan who was bin Laden's chauffeur, and he was seized in Afghanistan at the border with Pakistan and handed over to the Americans. The Americans put him into Guantanamo, and he was supposed to be the first exemplary trial for the new military commissions, this court system that was neither part of the military judicial system nor part of the civilian system. And Lieutenant Commander Swift was the guy from the Navy who was to defend him. He was assigned by the Navy to defend Hamdan. And this case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, in a very strongly worded opinion read from the bench by Justice Stevens, said that this exceeded presidential power. Without congressional authorization, this could not go forward. And so that's who Charlie Swift is. He was the chief. The first counsel he worked with Neil Katyal, who was a civilian, but they were the defendants of Hamdan. And in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, they won in the Supreme Court. And what Charlie Swift was getting at in that bit that you played was his sense of what had happened as secrecy had consolidated power towards the president and away from the other branches of government, including the courts and Congress.
I think one of the things, one of the insights in the film, one of the things we discovered as we moved forward through our interviews and sort of researching the topic was that in all cases, secrecy accrues power to those who can wield the power of secrecy. In this case, it almost always goes to the executive branch, that the more secrecy there is, the more power the executive has, the more power the executive has to act without any kind of oversight from either the judicial or legislative branches. So this tension between the branches of government was, you know, laid out very clearly and brilliantly by the writers of the Constitution, and secrecy is one of the central ways in which this kind of balance gets tilted towards the executive branch in a serious way.
Yeah. Rich in Sullivan is with us now. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Not to be too strong about it, but Joy, you know me, so I mean, you know my calling. Secrecy always weakens the power of the people to make necessary political decisions, and if it's not un-American, which I believe it is very un-Wisconsin-like, because these authors must know that one of the leading news figures in the state had a masthead on his newspaper, "Let the people have the truth and the freedom to discuss it, and all will go well." And the University of Wisconsin, which I consider to be truly my alma mater, protected Richard Eli, a university professor, and made a decision in which they said, whatever may be the limitations which trammel inquiry elsewhere, we believe the great state University of Wisconsin should ever encourage that continual and fearless sifting and winnowing by which alone the truth can be found. If the people decide that safety is more important than freedom, in Wisconsin, at least, we have a strong tradition that says, then the people do not deserve to be free, because they're basically saying they cannot handle the truth. I don't believe that, and neither do a great many other people in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We don't need a parallel government of secrecy.
Yeah, I need to get one or both of our guests to briefly respond before a weather break. Rob Moss, do you want to start?
Well, I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think it's incredibly important for people to have strong views about such things. But in the face of certain kinds of threats, I hate being in the position of trying to defend secrecy, and I don't mean to, on the one hand. And on the other hand, I think it's a complicated issue. It's worth thinking about it in a complicated way rather than just one way or the other, although I think people like you who are calling are part of the kind of oversight that the Constitution envisioned.
Yeah. Peter Gallison?
Yes, I think that's true, and we need to have mechanisms to evaluate when secrecy is justified and to make sure that we're not over-classifying wildly, which we clearly are now. So, you know, the courts can handle secrets. They handle secrets in assault cases, and in certain instances, they handle secrets when, you know, AT&T sues another company. Courts can handle secret things, and we need to be able to rely. We need to have institutions that can push back on the attempt to simply classify freely. One of the things that we saw a lot in making the film was people would say to us, "No one has ever been fired for overclassifying, but people do get fired for underclassifying." So there's all sorts of turf reasons and bureaucratic reasons and personal advancement reasons for classifying around you in such a degree that you're safe in some sense, or your institution is safe. And we need to be tougher about that, because overclassifying does prevent the courts, Congress, and the people from making decisions about fundamental issues.
Peter Galison is a professor of the history of science and physics at Harvard University. Also talking with Rob Moss, who is Director of Undergraduate Studies for the Department of Visual and Environmental Studies at Harvard University. Both are the co-directors, co-producers of the documentary Secrecy, that takes a look at U.S. government secrecy, the history of it through post 9/11. And we welcome your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. How much should the public know about clandestine operations? Does it keep us safe, or does too much secrecy put us in danger? Those are some of the questions explored in the documentary. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
The dichotomy is not between national security and openness. The dichotomy is between secrecy and security. The secrecy is not making us safer. There are better ways to make us safer. Less secrecy would actually make us safer. We caught the Unabomber because we published his screeds in the newspaper, and his brother opened the Chicago Tribune in the suburbs of Illinois and said, this sounds like Crazy Ted up at a cabin in Montana. Better call the FBI. And they go catch him. 12 years they chased this guy. Never caught him until they turn loose the stuff they'd been sitting on.
That was Tom Blanton, who is director of the National Security Archives, talking in support of openness, more openness and less government secrecy. He was featured in the documentary Secrecy, and we are talking with the two filmmakers of that documentary during this hour and welcoming your thoughts and questions for them. Secrecy will be one of the features during the Wisconsin Film Festival. Secrecy will be shown on Sunday, April the 6th at 4:15 p.m. at the Chazen Museum of Art on the UW-Madison campus. And we got an email from Jim in Madison, and he says, more than 25 years ago, the Progressive magazine, which is based in Madison, published The Secret of the H-Bomb. The government argued that this would lead to proliferation. Is there any evidence that, in the years since, that this secret was, in fact, a problem for our security? Do you know about that, Rob Moss?
Well, I'm going to defer to Peter, who this is absolutely his area.
Okay.
So, Peter.
So the Progressive case was about the publication of schematic diagrams about how a hydrogen bomb functioned. And generally speaking, the functioning of nuclear weapons is one of the most classified parts of the whole classified system. But what one of the people who knows most about this, Sig Hecker, who headed up Los Alamos for many years, said the real danger to us today are not high-tech aspects, the latest, smallest, most powerful nuclear weapon. It's the low-tech stuff, the things that you need to know to manufacture, how metallurgy works, how to mill, refine, and pound out uranium-235, how to process plutonium, how to shape the explosives, and so on. And that sort of information, rather than these schematics about hydrogen bombs, seems to be what people like Hecker are most worried about getting into the wrong hands. So yes, there have been secrets that have led to directly to proliferation. I've never seen anything, but I don't have clearance. I don't know the details, but I've never seen any indication that the Progressive case issues were responsible for proliferation, whereas what was responsible were things like AQ Khan leaking how to make centrifuges and having that information circulate around Pakistan and North Korea and other countries, including Iran.
Thanks very much to Jim for the email. Next, we go to John in Madison. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, the historical record shows how secrecy has been used by the CIA in this country, and it's not to not give our enemies information that we don't want them to have, but it's to control the democracy in this country and not allow the populace to know what's up. They did this in basically three ways. One, the CIA is forbidden to engage in Gestapo-like internal surveillance. This is one of the big fears when they created it. They have done that. Two, they're not allowed to propagandize the public. And I'll start with that. The CIA provided false information about bomber and missile gaps with the Soviet Union to propel our legislators to expand the war, I'm losing my track.
Well, that's all right.
Let me just...
We're coming close to the top of the hour, so...
Well, can I hang on?
Yeah, well, you can... I don't know. I mean, it's, so the CIA uses secrecy to control our democracy, Rob Moss?
I think that... excuse me. The issue of people behaving badly, whether it's institutional or individuals, when there's no oversight, when you're not looking at what people are doing, is absolutely true. That when you're afraid, when you have an axe to grind, when you're politically motivated, if there's nobody looking over your shoulders, seeing what you're doing, things will go badly. It's not just in the United States. I think it's everywhere. I think that the Constitution attempts to make this more public. But, you know, in Abu Ghraib, Tom Blanton wants to say that it's exactly because people are afraid and there's nobody looking and there's kind of intimations from the executive saying the gloves are off, we have to do whatever we have to do to protect ourselves, that people start to do things that they ought not to do. And this is a very old story.
Yeah. Anything to add, Peter Callison?
Well, I think that that's I agree with what Rob's saying, and I think that the caller reflect when he says he's worried about abuses by the CIA that have had very bad consequences for people's faith in the agency is something that we hear even from people inside the CIA who say that they one of the reasons that they want to have a certain degree of secure oversight is they don't want to lose the ability to be able to do the things that are necessary because of abuses that make Congress and the people turn against them. And they've been through that several times over the last years in very important ways. And I think the caller is pointing to that. And it's interesting that we hear that from also when we were doing interviews for the film from people inside the CIA.
Yeah. John, I don't have time for three different examples, but is there an example that you wanted to specifically cite?
Yeah, well, the word I was looking for was arms race, the escalation of expenditures for the arms race with the Soviet Union for arms. But the main thing I wanted to cite was it went much further than this. They penetrated the American news media, and it wasn't just to introduce agents over into foreign countries. It was to produce articles for the population. They created the American mindset, the worldview. Amy Goodman goes into this in her chapter, The Mighty Wurlitzer, in the book Inertia. It's excellent. 400 agents in all the major news agencies in this country, plus they had established in foreign lands between 50 and 200 radio stations, publishing houses, and they laundered this false news back into the United States and created this American perception of a false world, and everybody acted on it.
Yeah.
And the other, yeah, but the other.
Well, all right, I'm sorry, I don't have time for the other thing. The propaganda and infiltrating the media, Rob Moss.
I think this is right. I remember mm-hmm. this. I remember when this was happening, and I was horrified by it. And it's again, it's a statement about the ways in which intelligence gathering gets perverted in the political system when there's no oversight, when there's nobody looking at it. As Peter says, there can be oversight, even if that oversight is secret. There has to be ways in which the secret makers have secret oversight. The FISA courts were created explicitly to deal with this. One of the difficulties in this particular administration is that they wanted to get rid of the FISA courts as well, the secret courts that took a look at such kinds of behavior and said, is this okay or is this not okay?
Mm-hmm. And one last call, Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi, I had two examples of secrecy. One is, you may have talked about it, when Cheney met with the heads of energy companies and put together an energy plan for the whole country and made their proceedings secret. And when it was lawsuits were brought against the administration thus far has won. And second, habeas corpus is probably the most important right to have arrests made public we have, and that has been completely trampled on by the Bush administration. One example is the original military commission's trials were not going to allow lawyers to meet in private with their clients.
And I'm out of time. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut people off, but we have less than a minute. Who can maybe talk about that last part?
Peter Galison. I think that the caller is quite on target. The excerpt from Lieutenant Commander Swift that you played earlier in the show has to do exactly with this issue of the military commissions and the problems with doing away with habeas corpus in a system that's outside both the military and the civilian judicial systems. That's why this is such a explosive case, and why the Supreme Court was so concerned, why the military's been so concerned about creating a system of justice that is not tried over years and has not got the background and strength of either the civilian or military systems.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. People can see the film if they're in Madison for the Wisconsin Film Festival this week. And is there a Peter Galison, any other way to see the film?
Well, we're working on a television distribution, and we're trying to arrange also a theatrical distribution. So we're hoping that there'll be other opportunities coming up, and you can sign our website, secrecyfilm.com. You can sign up for information.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us.
Thanks very much.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.